Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Jules Gill, I'm glad to see your little face.
Little, I've been told that I have a massive moon-shaped head. Do not belittle my monstrous visage.
It's a Hello, perfect Scott. Size for exactly what I need to see on a Friday morning. Yes, this is the Entitled Banter podcast, the UBP, the UBP.
UBP.
I'm Scott Tilford. That's Jules Gill.
Yes, I am.
Diving into the latest questions, talking points, and whatever else people want us to blabber about at the end of the week. So we'll get through as many questions and stuff as we can. It's a big day for video games in regards to the Star Wars Jedi Survivor game, which released at 5 a.m. I want to quickly talk about this because why don't we do midnight launches anymore? Every game launches quote unquote at like midday or 5 a.m. or whatever.
You know why? Right, okay, think about the practicality of what it's like to actually install a game day one. Okay, so if you don't have a pre-order, pre-install sort of thing going on where you can actually get the game ready for launch day one, then you are going to spend at least 2 hours trying to get your game to work. I mean, I've told you this story when I queued up outside of the game in Bristol for Fallout 4. I got my steelbook copy. I got home at like 1:30 in the morning after I walked back up that bloody long hill. And then I put it in. I sat down and it just said, waiting for game to install, verifying.
Yes.
2.5 hours installation later, I was like, right, I'm going to bed then. There was literally no point me doing that.
That's the thing. I feel
that they do it at midnight launches anymore. Because of the fact that they go, cool, you can play it from midnight. Also, here's the day one patch that is 5.6 gigabytes. And it's just like, cool, right, well, do it at least at midday so you can pop it on at lunch and then it's done by the time you finish school or work.
But they're not respecting the content creator massif, because I used to stay up until midnight and then play whatever it was, maybe until 3 a.m. and then get a little cheeky video out in the morning. Can't do that if it's unlocking at 5 a.m.
No, can't do it, mate. Can't be done, mate. The times, they are changing.
Literally, they're changing to 5 a.m. But yeah, but yeah, Jedi Survivor is out today. I've bought it. I think Josh is getting a hold of it. We'll do some videos and stuff on it in the coming days. Hopefully going to aim for a tips and tricks video, because I think there's... apparently that combat system is incredible, and I kind of want to dive into that and see what the different layers and stuff are
now,
to it.
You say that, but it was weird because I was watching the IGN review of the game, and when they were talking about the combat mechanics in it, I don't know if it was just like the gameplay footage choice was wrong, but it looked really kind of like the guy was like, Cal was jumping on people.
The animations
are
weird.
Clipping through them. He was like hitting them, but they were just kind of like bouncing off their arm. I was like, it just didn't look very kinetic or fluid. I know that I'm probably wrong because everyone's saying that it's amazing, but when I was watching one of the specific lightsaber styles, it just looked like he was taking the piss. Right. It was just like, it looked like somebody, I don't know, like just doing like a little robot dance, walking towards him, just going like left, right sort of thing.
I thought in the run-up to launch that the animations looked really off and there was something just off about the whole thing. But the reviews, like you said, are really, really high.
Yeah.
And I kind of read that it just prioritizes responsiveness at all times. So you're sort of cutting out, you can cut animations off to go and do something else. So
Dark Souls then.
Kinda, yeah. But in a way, I quite like the idea of prioritizing responsiveness as much as possible. Like the direct opposite of like Red Dead Redemption 2, where it's like you can force him to move, you can force him to dodge out of something or whatever. So I'm very curious how that feels, because I think the same as you. Whenever I look at it being played, it doesn't look good, but it has been reviewing really well.
That's something to be said about how a game looks versus how it feels to play, because there are a few games out there that honestly, they don't look exceptional or engaging, but to play them, for me, it will always be Animal Crossing. There's a good example of that. I know that it's not like super gameplay heavy when it comes to like combo or button memorization, but watching people play it, I'm just kind of like, this is boring. But then when you play it yourself, you're like, oh, I'm actually juggling quite a few different mechanics all at once, trying to figure out where I'm going to go and do all that sort of stuff. Whereas So I think that maybe Star Wars Survivor is the new Animal Crossing. Is that basically what you take away from this?
There is a parallel. That's the Venn diagram. Yeah. But yes, we'll get through as many questions and talking points as possible. First thing from Mr. JC, who just says, it's my wedding day on Saturday. Would love a shout out.
Yes.
Have an amazing weekend. Well, have an amazing wedding. Have a lovely marriage. Marriage perfectly rated. Not overrated, not underrated, just perfect. It's very, very good. I recommend
it. Straight down the middle there.
It's a very good time.
I mean, I'll go on the opposite side there. Me and Kerry, probably not going to get married. So underrated, overrated, you choose. Like, whatever.
I'm a big fan. But massive shout out. Enjoy your, I don't know whereabouts you're from, but it's a long bank holiday weekend in the UK. So enjoy your weekend and marriage things.
Nice. Yeah, congratulations.
Yes. Next question from Mouse Hand says, hello to the best podcasters ever. Well, thank you very much. What would Microsoft need to do to right the Xbox ship? I have an Xbox Series S and a PS5. The Series S is used to play online multiplayer games with my PC friends. I play all of my single player games on the PS5. Can they save this generation?
I mean, you've got to ask yourself, what went wrong? What was the catalyst to where Xbox is now? So if we take a look back at how they've handled their own premier IPs, their exclusives, you got the likes of the Halos, the Gears of Wars, massively underperforming and not being treated with the love and respect. They've also done a huge pivot towards Game Pass and streaming focused stuff that's on there. Mm-hmm. And you start to see a company that maybe doesn't even want to be in the console race anymore. Nope. I mean, they've gone out on record and said that the current state of Xbox is disappointing, and that maybe shows a glimmer of hope that they would like to save it, or it's not in the current place they want it to be. Mm-hmm. But it does seem to be that everything they say versus every move that they make as a company seems to be kind of in direct opposition to one another.
It's a weird thing where a few years ago, there was a thing where Phil Spencer, it was when Google Stadia was being talked about, and Phil Spencer was like, I'm going to start referring to him as Phil Spender, because he keeps trying to spend the $70 billion.
He's just got burning a hole in his very large pockets.
Hey, big spender. And he was talking about, you know, Google Stadia and the advent of cloud gaming and how the future was going to be and whatever. And he was like, our competition is not Sony and Nintendo, it's Amazon and Google. And I think that they are trying to play that game of like 4D chess. But like at this point, Google Stadia have packed up their chessboard and left the entire country or whatever. And it's like Amazon Luna is not the thing people are talking about. Like a few people might have Luna subscriptions, a few people might cloud game, but it's not the all-encompassing future, which is ironic because the cloud gaming was at the heart of the CMA decision to block the Activision takeover deal. So I just think, for me, it's almost as simple as saying they don't have any games. Because I feel like you were saying about trying to pinpoint the exact pivot, you know, when did they start being so regarded as, you know, they're being behind and whatever. It was kind of like this slow thing across the last generation, where like they got their first foot wrong, they then stumbled for the entire generation, and a lot of people just kind of thought, well, you know, they're holding back because the next generation they'll nail it, and then they just didn't come out the gates with any games. The Series X didn't launch with a single exclusive.
It's a real strange one as well, because it's like I feel like Halo alone could have righted the wrongs on this if it was delivered correctly. I feel like Halo Infinite was just the worst example of one of the biggest IPs being treated so poorly. It felt amateurish across the board. To take a beloved character like Master Chief, make a campaign that was felt so aimless in areas, and like I really enjoyed the open world aspect. I thought that I'd hate it, but I did actually come to enjoy it quite a lot towards the end. But I just did not feel connected to the story. It was just like, you're meant to be telling me this emotive return of one of the gaming's greatest icons, and you're delivering me something that is so generic that I can't even tell you what happened in the plot apart from he went to do the thing and the thing died or didn't die.
He went to a place, there was an evil dude, and he killed the evil dude.
And but, it's like the focus they put onto the multiplayer. Great, okay, fine. That's one of the biggest like aspects of it. But then they didn't deliver any content for it. So it's like, boys, what are you doing? You just wait until the game's ready.
That's like, kind of my thing, because I'm like, to be so stratospherically mismanaged. Like, I just, like, yeah, that whole thing where they had to delay Halo for a year when it was like 2 weeks before launch and it wasn't ready, and they still showed it off and everyone went, that's unfinished. And then they went, oh, actually, yep, it is. Yep, we'll give you it in another
Bye,
year.
Bye, Craig.
Exactly. And it was just that weird thing. They still are operating in that space that Phil Spender, you know, outlined years ago about they're still trying to go up against this bigger assumption assumption of cloud gaming, this bigger assumption of wider service gaming, making Game Pass, making Xbox cloud streaming. They're not that, they don't seem to be that bothered about exclusives or just like, you know, big games. Although for me, the way they could save stuff, especially in terms of like word of mouth, is more games like Hi-Fi Rush. And I mean that in terms of the game itself, like it's designed to be finished. It respects your time. It's a really, really fun game. The soundtrack's really fun. But shadow dropping them, like revealing that actually we do have finished games. We do have stuff ready to go. And making people excited about what we're going to get this month, what we're going to get next month. Like, that could be great.
Did you see what they said about that game, though, saying that it was actually quite a disappointment sales-wise? It hasn't made the money that everyone thinks that it has.
That was and a weird...
That's a bit of a shame as well, because it's such a... It was such a unique thing to just have it there, ready to go, perfectly polished, perfectly playable. No sort of like day one patches and all this other malarkey that goes on with current day gaming. And it was not well received, like in terms of sales.
That's a weird thing, because that came from Jeff Grubb as like an insider. He was like, oh, it didn't do what they wanted it to do or something.
But maybe they had a completely misunderstood appeal of how much it was going to make.
Like, well, that's the thing.
I know for a fact that when they talked about the Avengers, like this is how much money they wanted the Avengers game to make, and here's how much money that it actually pulled in. It's still a ridiculous amount of money by anyone else's standards, but because it didn't hit that $500 million mark that they wanted to hit within the first month, it's considered a failure. So maybe you should take it with a pinch.
There's a lot of weird optics with that. Yeah, because like Jeff Grubb initially put that out, and then Aaron Greenberg from Xbox said that according to all their key metrics, Hi-Fi Rush did succeed, and then Tango Gameworks are being expanded. So it seems like it worked internally. It was just but then Jeff Grubb did a clarification video and just said, look, this is how much it cost, without specifics, just saying there's a certain amount it cost. It didn't make that back. But then according to Xbox internally, it still was a success. So it's a bit weird. I guess we'll see what happens with that. But I think for me, the approach to what Xbox can mean to the to the industry is capitalizing on Game Pass with big releases every other month, and some of them are shadow drops. And that's how you do it. You certainly own enough studios even before the takeover. You know, where's Double Fine's next thing or whoever? Yeah. Like, you know, you have games that you could put out and then they remind you, hey, by the way, you're already paying for it. It's already part of your subscription. Go enjoy this new thing. Like,
it's such a strange idea to think that Microsoft doesn't consider them part of the video game market that they actually had a huge hand in. They still very much are. Mm. And I feel like them trying to deny that they want to be in the current state of the gaming industry, that they want to be playing, like you say, 4D chess with somebody else. It's just weakening their stance within the current game market to a point where when they do finally decide that, oh, actually, we do need to keep our core player base and market contained, they'll come back to it and they'll be like, well, you forgot about us. You treated us badly. Like, there is, and I will state this very clearly, and there probably will be some Xbox fans that will be annoyed about this, there is no reason to own an Xbox right now. I personally feel like in this current state, that console is the deadest of dead. Like, I cannot think of a single game that I can't play on my PC that came
through
the Game
Pass. I was going to say, if you have a PC.
Exactly. And like, let's face it, like 90% of the world does have some sort of laptop or gaming PC that will be able to run at least half of the games that are on this thing.
So that's true.
Like, why do I need this? Mm-hmm. And maybe that's the expression that Microsoft is approaching with, where they've gone, oh, we've let lightning out of the bottle here with Game Pass and how creatively expansive this can be for us as a business model. But then they look at the actual like console itself and be like, ah, you're a bit of dead weight now, aren't you? So maybe the idea to get them back on track isn't to think, oh, let's separate ourselves from Game Pass or our future models from that big brick that's sitting in the living room, and thinking, how do we tie everything we want Game Pass to be into that console going forward? Maybe we make it into a portable device. Maybe we make it that it's basically just a hard drive that allows you to access Game Pass, but you can take it anywhere with you, plug it into anything, stream it on any device. You know what I mean? Like, that's the vibe we need to be moving towards. Make the console work for Game Pass, if that is going to be the model going forward. Don't abandon it, though.
Yeah. They've said that the next thing they were working on was the Xbox Keystone, which is like their name of like a USB streaming dongle thing that would let you have Game Pass anywhere or Xbox Cloud streaming anywhere. I mean, yeah, I've got an Xbox Series X, and like you kind of buy them. I mean, I don't necessarily regret it. I just kind of wish I'd seen something on it that took full advantage of it. That's what I tend to go back to. And whenever I talk to other like friends and relatives about owning, because they all got a Series X's, you know, they're just like, I don't know why I got this. And it's like, you kind of have it because Game Pass is incredible. incredible as a deal. And if you only care about getting some games every month, regardless of anything, and it's very curated, like it is a good selection of games, I do think it's a great deal. You know, if you care about games overall, you can just get some. But if you want those big titles, if you want the bigger reasons to be like, well, what do I need the Series X for? They've never been able to give you something that only runs on a Series X or takes full advantage of it. So I mean, that's like, the weird thing.
The way to think of it is the Series X is the console that has the best features but the worst exclusives.
Pretty much. Yeah, pretty much. It's like it has sort of the most potential, and there's not a single thing in there that could take full advantage of it. But yeah, it's one of those things where I did a video the other day about, you know, because Microsoft said they were upset with the Xbox division, at least according again to Jeff Grubb. I did a whole thing about that, about the state of Xbox, the trajectory they were on, how much people used to love the 360, and how much they've fallen off across the 2010s and just not been able to reclaim it. I think there's always a part of people that want Xbox to succeed if you were there at the beginning, but they're just doing weird business moves at the minute. They're doing weird sort of approaches to the industry.
Trying to buy out all of the competing publishers and developers is, I don't know, man. It doesn't feel good, does it? It feels very much like we've dropped back into what EA used to do back in the early 2000s, where it just bought up every single developer or publisher that had any sort of interesting ideas, put them all under its banner, and then closed them down as soon as they asset stripped them. Mm-hmm. And I want to live in a world where there is competition in the gaming market when it comes to consoles and choice, because say that they did drop out, say that they never produced another console again, and they only went into this online thing of apps. We go into that discussion we had a couple of weeks ago about, do they block Sony from using Game Pass, or do they charge them through the nose?
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy, because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
It doesn't matter, but at the end of the day, we, the customers, are going to be paying the price for it. Quite literally, we'll see games prices soar because that'll be the only avenue to play them on. They'll have to eat up the cost of those Game Pass licenses, and we'll have to pay them on our games going forward. It all ends up with costing us money if there isn't competition in the market.
That's kind of the thing, where we're in a really good period with Game Pass at the minute. If you enjoy sampling a different amount of games every month, because you are getting the best deal. I don't know if they're making an active loss on it. They've never really revealed the specifics of it. Did say that Game Pass makes up 15% of their overall revenue, and he doesn't expect that to get...
when you think about it.
But 15, though, I mean, like, it's like, over time he was saying the overall amount of revenue could go up, but he doesn't think that Game Pass would ever make up. I think he quoted, like, he doesn't think it'll ever get to 70 or 80%. It'll always be about 15, but their overall amount might go up, 15% of something else. Yeah. But he's like, the logic is set there. I think it's interesting when you mention EA, because they've, this year, come back around to single player stuff. Like, you've got Dead Space Remake, you've got Jedi Survivor, and it's one of those things where they had to go through that whole thing where they tried online services and microtransactions microtransactions and loot boxes. And then I, at the end, just went, should we just make some games? And maybe people will buy the games. And it's like, that's all it ever comes back around to. Like, Maybe they have to try all this stuff.
We're just in Microsoft's difficult second album phase. It's just one of those things where they've tried it all, they got it nailed down, and now they're trying something new and not everyone's loving it. Mm-hmm. It may well be that just the market dictates that people love familiarity, and we may just see them all settling back down again to have our three or four consoles, and that's going to be it, gaming forevermore sort of thing.
The thing that I think, if I would recommend a lot of people go on, I think it's on the official Xbox channel. They did a whole documentary about the first 20 years of Xbox, and they're very frank about what they got wrong and what worked and what didn't. They talked to all the old devs. Some people came across from old Atari and everything, and they talk about like those initial years and like what Xbox kind of used to stand for, and that idea of like they were the first system with a hard drive, they were the first console that went online with like mass multiplayer. Obviously, the Dreamcast did it, but like things like that, and they used to push for everything, Xbox Live Arcade and all that kind of thing. And this feels like that spirit of what that company is. It's like, we should push for all these online platforms and stuff. It's just that they don't have the games to back it up. And so I think that's kind of interesting that they had all these firsts, and then for the Xbox One, it fell down, and then now it continues to fall down. So I don't know about saving this generation. I don't think they care. I don't think that's the game they're playing. I don't think they'll ever be able to compete with Nintendo and Xbox. And Sony. But maybe they put out some actual games in the next few years. We know we've got Starfield.
That would be nice.
So yeah, there's definitely Starfield and Redfall for this year. Question from Jack Asbury, who says, what do you both think of the rumors of a new PlayStation handheld that is remote play only? Think, given the success of the Switch and the Steam Deck, it's a massive missed opportunity to not have a powerful PlayStation handheld. Yes. Have you seen this stuff?
I have, but aren't we just kind of having the two specters looming over us of the Vita and the, what was the other one?
Don't
the
you PSP? Speak ill of my beloved PS Vita. I love that thing.
This is the thing. I actually am totally on board with you and think that the Vita may well be one of the greatest handheld
Vita
consoles
rules.
Ever made.
It's, yeah.
I got myself a super secondhand copy of it for like 30 bones and
nice.
Got like 7 games with it as well, because people were just like, what is this piece of dead tech?
Uh-huh.
You know what? It runs so well. The control schemes and the layout of the console itself, beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just like, yeah, they can do it. The problem is with Sony, as we've seen with tons of their other stuff, is that they are absolutely bollocks at marketing. They do not know how to sell that console well.
My thing as well with the Vita, the thing that they didn't shoot itself in the foot, they just chainsawed the foot off, was changing the storage capacity. They made a first party proprietary storage method, so you couldn't use SD cards, you had to buy PS Vita storage.
Stupid.
And then it was like
five times
the price. If they did, that's the thing, we're now in a place where people obviously love the Switch and everything. If they just did another version of the Vita, call it something else, don't tag it with that name because people don't get it, whatever. You do a whole new handheld PlayStation, just like a Switch or whatever, maybe that would work a lot better. Because one of the things that people didn't like about the PSP and the Vita was like, oh, no one wants to play console games on the go. Well, Nintendo proved that completely wrong.
Yep.
So maybe it would fit better now.
What are the new details about this other handheld device that we've got out?
That's the thing. The rumor for it is that it's a new PlayStation handheld. The assumption is that it will be shaped like the Vita, but it's a remote play only. So it would only work in whatever Wi-Fi. I guess it would always have to tether to your home console. So whether it just doubles up as a second screen. That's what you can do on your phone right now anyway.
Yeah, see, that's not providing a feature that I feel that anyone is asking for.
No, same. Like, remote play is something that you tag on to something. It's not what you sell a system for.
I don't know why they don't tie it to a mechanic that they've already introduced that is already needs help, because the PSVR 2 has obviously just come out and everyone is raving about it, especially Josh Brown. He absolutely loves it. And Ash Millman as well absolutely loves it.
Shout out.
But the issue is that because it's always a VR headset, it's got such a small install base compared to the wider market that you've got who have just regular consoles.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you make that more appealing? Well, you could add more games into it, or you could add functionality that crosses over with other consoles or peripherals. So why not build this new V2, we'll just call it, instead of the Vita,
around that's very
the,
good.
Thank you very much. Yeah, I charge by the hour.
PlayStation V2.
You could have it so that this controller appears in-game whenever you're playing, and you could actually use the touchscreen on your touchscreen to do other things around it. Mm. Or like have it so that it is, instead of having to buy those stupidly expensive VR controllers, this could act as another thing for a second player to join you in games. Like, if you can make it so that it has functionality that adds into the newest bit of tech that is struggling maybe at the moment because of its hefty price tag, that's how you do it. You tie it into that.
Mm-hmm. I also wonder about the amount of people that use remote play in general. I've seen quite a few people tweet about it just saying like, oh, you know, if my partner wants to use the TV or the kids wanted to play something else or whatever, you can just like get your system to beam it to the phone and then just keep playing. Like, I wonder if that just, if they've noticed that more people do that than they used to, because remote play has been around for like a decade at this point. Maybe that just has an uptick and they think they can kind of corner the market on it, but I don't see the point of not letting you take your game with you. But maybe they just don't want to commission a bunch of portable games.
It's an issue as well, because you think about the marketing, how you would advertise that, like for a TV spot. What would you say? Like, oh, so your partner's trying to watch TV and doesn't want to share the thing with you and you want to be doing something else. What are you actually trying to say with that? Mm. Oh, I don't want to spend time with my partner, so I'm going to play video games instead and ignore them.
It's, I mean, that is what I do.
I know that's the reality, but you shouldn't be marketing that, because it's basically just saying like, hey, do you want to not spend quality time together? Like, I don't know if that would work.
I feel like, because if I was a kid and like, you know, my parents want to use the big TV then and I want to play my games.
With the big light on.
With the big light on, because they're getting it wrong and it took me 20 years to figure it out. Then, you know, maybe they're doing that. And maybe if you're targeting that demographic of like, well, you can keep gaming, you don't have to stop. Then you just pick up your remote thing and it continues. I can see that it is like a version of the Switch where you just take it out the dock and keep playing. It's just weird for me because the Vita is an almost perfect system. It was just so mismarketed and it was so completely addled by all the storage stuff that I would rather they got that right. But I guess that means greenlighting a bunch of portable games and they don't want to do all that again. So that's maybe the thing.
It's a tough one.
Yeah. Next question from Pinky. He says, can we have more on the 60 FPS debacle? I used to be a graphics guy like Josh, but I've been converted to the smooth side by Scott on the PS5 and my PS5. 60 FPS is a deal breaker now.
100% agree, Pinky. You
same.
Are. My voice is going, but my takes are powering through. What happened is that I too had this revelation fairly recently, actually. Mm-hmm. Because I got myself a brand new gaming rig that can basically just go like unlimited power.
Right.
I was playing these things on like stupid FPS rates and I went back to 30 FPS because I was playing some old PS2 games and I was like, what is going on here?
Yes.
Why do I feel like I am actually moving in slow motion myself? So therefore 60 FPS is a deal breaker. I think that anytime that it dips below, it feels so foreign now because every game is marketed as having 60 FPS. Base. It feels strange.
Yeah, especially if you go between the two. I think if you go 60 down to 30, feels horrible. If you go 30 to 60, it feels sped up. For me, if you go 60 to 120, it doesn't feel that different.
Yeah, At some point, you can kind of like just, they're so not negligible unless you're a pro fighting game player or something like that, where every single sort of frame actually matters. Mm-hmm.
My thing is like my like middle ground is just whatever's a locked frame rate. If you can give me locked 30, to me that can be fine. I'll get used to it after about 10 minutes or whatever. Sure. It's just the dips. Like it's always the dips in frame rate that you pick up on because you can feel it. You can feel it in the controls and the responsiveness. I kind of play everything on performance mode now, but I hate that I do that because it just means that you're missing out on the stuff that you supposedly bought the systems or the tech for, because then you don't have the ray tracing, you don't have all the bells and whistles because it needs to maintain the frame rate. I know your PC will be able to do all of it. Yeah. The console's gone.
Do you think that it was actually like a mistake to ever give players the option?
Like, I hate it
just,
personally.
Should they have just locked it in at performance mode and just been like, that's it?
It was a weird thing because that's what Spidey ended up doing, Spider-Man on PS5, because they launched on performance mode and like visuals mode or whatever. And then, like, I don't know, a couple months later, there was a performance ray tracing mode where you can do both. And I forget what it does something where they get rid of the amount of NPCs walking around New York to free up the rendering.
Fair enough.
But you would never notice that if that was just what they launched
with. Not at all.
So yeah, for me, it's like, give me the best version based on what the devs think is the best split between the two. But yeah, that thing continues to roll on in terms of what people prefer. I definitely prioritize responsiveness. So it's going to be whatever like feels the best.
Yeah.
Question from your done messed up Aaron, who says, good day, gentlemen. I hate pre-orders. That said, they just announced the Armored Core 6 Collector's Edition and it includes a 19-centimeter mech statue costing $221. Ooh. Am I a sick man if I pre-order this?
You know what? No, because a giant mech. I'm sorry, but a giant mech is so cool.
It is. Are you an Armored Core person? Because I've not ever played them. I know what they are, obviously, but I've never played one.
I played the was it Armored Core 2?
Okay.
On the PC way back. I want to say like 1997. Maybe I'm wrong. I'm wrong there. But I remember having some fond memories with that because my cousin had it. I never owned it.
Right.
But I just remember the case being so cool. It looked awesome. Now, back to the concept of pre-ordering, mm-hmm. I am actually tempted. I'm just getting my thoughts together because I feel like I'm overwhelmed at the moment.
I'll set a certain bar here and see if you can clear
it. It's just Vanquish 2, mate. Let's face it. It's just Vanquish 2, this game.
It might, well, oh God, I wish. We'll talk about the gameplay stuff. To set a bar on pre-orders, I spent £30 getting the amiibo for the Tears of the Kingdom coming up. That hasn't come yet. Hasn't arrived yet. But okay. I'll just throw money at this because they're all going to be limited edition. And I love the look of New Link. So I was like, I want that. And so I think if you're super into something and you have the money and it's not going to mean you can't eat that evening, then just do the cool thing. Do the thing that lets you get the cool tat.
It's very weird, isn't it? Because they go like, oh yeah, the world has been rocked by a global cost of living crisis. And there's been like the pandemic. There's been like all sorts of shipping and issues and literal wars.
Yeah.
But also, hope that you've got 200 quid in your back pocket saved up to buy a giant robot toy that you can't even play with and will sit there forever. The problem is, I think, that with these pre-orders and collector's editions is... there is an unwritten rule that the cooler the item that they're asking you to buy before you play the game, the worse the game in question is. Now, I actually do hold high hopes for this because From Software do seem to be knocking it out of the park with every title that they touch. I think that a break from Elden Ring, Dark Souls, all of that other stuff to do this sort of like sci-fi version of that would be a great fit for them to return to form. Mm-hmm. But... let's face it, there have been quite a few dodgy pre-orders that have cost the absolute earth that have ended up being for rather terrible games. And it's basically just been like, look at the shiny thing, party with your cash, thank you very much, here's a subpar game.
Yeah, I think it depends. For me, I'm always going off how detailed something is. I love figures, I love collecting, mm-hmm. I love all that stuff. Figures with articulation so I can repose them in different weeks and stuff. I love all that stuff. So for me, it depends how much detail is in there. For $220, I would expect a very premium-looking piece. I mean, yeah, that's a hell of a lot of money. The most I ever spent on a video game collectible, I think I've mentioned before, but it was The Witcher 3's polystone statue of Geralt with the Griffin. That's nicely detailed, as long as you don't look at his face too closely. And so that's pretty good. But yeah, I think in terms of pre-order stuff, for me, it's always like, am I genuinely going to love this? Am I going to put it on a shelf? Yeah. Am I going to, you know, I'm not just going to throw it to the side after the launch window kind of thing. It is actually genuinely nice to have on a shelf.
It's also like kind of really sad as well when you get like these amazing things. Because I remember the Arkham Knight box. There was like some people got sent like massive statues on that. It's like, yeah, oh wow, Arkham Knight's gonna be great. Imagine like hating the game that you spent all that money for, and you just look at it and be like, well, I guess the statue's cool. or like other gamers coming over to your house and be like, oh, you like Arkham Knights, do you? And you'd be like, no.
I did at one point.
I just like the Batman. Batman's here.
Batman's good. That was my thing. For Forspoken, I still have the Forspoken Steelbook because it came with the regular game. So when I sold the regular game, I was like, I'm going to keep the Steelbook and maybe in like 50 years' time, this will be worth something. Probably won't be.
Nope.
Like a relic
you'll have to pay someone to take it away.
the collection service.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think for Armored Core itself, the Fires of Rubicon like gameplay looks awesome. It's kind of like just Dark Souls. I mean, the thing is, like, this is coming from someone who's not played Armored Core, so I get that this is completely blasphemous because it predates Dark Souls. But to me, it looked a little bit like Souls combat, but with aerial attacks.
Let's just save us from ever going down the route of it's the X of Dark Souls sort of thing. Let's say Nier Automata instead, because there's a lot more crossover there, potato patata with them, because you've got giant mechs floating around. It's like the beginning opening sequence there. Mm-hmm. There's lots of like sliding around there. I would say, if I were to pitch this game, Del Boy style, coming down there, I see you coming with your wallet all fat, I'd be like, all right, boys, you want to buy this game? It's like Nier Automata, potato, patata meets Vanquish. I'd have your money. I'd have your money right there and then, mate.
I'll tell you what it reminded me of, and I think only about five people played this, Zone of the Enders.
Oh.
It was,
Did I ever play that?
That was a beautiful game.
I was fuming because I have a copy of Silent Hill 2, the limited edition Steelbook one for the PlayStation 2.
Shout.
And it came with a demo for Zone of the Enders 2 as well in it, I believe.
For 2? Okay.
Is that what it is?
I was going to say Metal Gear Solid 2 came with the original Zone of the Enders.
I'm talking absolutely bupkiss out of my butt. I actually have a copy of Zone of the Enders 2, but my old dog... chewed it up. So I was like, cool, wicked. Thank you for that.
Old Dog was not a fan of the Zone of the Enders franchise. But stuff like that, mech combat, I feel like is an untapped potential in the new age. I think you can do a hell of a lot more with the weapon effects and the customization and everything else. And Josh apparently is a massive Armored Core guy. So he was playing that when he was a kid. So he's looking forward to it. Final question from Jack Jingle, who says, any good download memories? Excited to go in June for Double Metallica. My best memory is meeting my now wife at the festival in 2014. Well, what a lovely little story.
We started the podcast with somebody's about to get married. Now we're here ending it.
Just the romance pod.
I tell you what, it's lovely. Now, I've never been to Download. Have you not? No, never been. I think it's because of the fact that I'm kind of not a festival guy. I like going to the Art Tangent Festival, and there's a few other sort of like smaller ones that I've been to across the years. Mm-hmm. Every single time that I bring up Download or Reading, I always get the same look from my group of friends where they look at me and they're just like, oh, like a 1,000-yard stare. You see the war flashbacks hitting. You can hear the explosions in their mind. And they're like, it was a long summer sort of thing. I don't want to have that because it feels like they've left a piece of them behind in those fields. Like,
I feel like with festivals in general, music festivals, because I've done loads of them, but I feel like quite a lot of my friends used to say you have a 3-festival rule in you. It's like once you've done 3, you've done it. You've kind of had the feel of a festival. And then some people realize that they love it and they go every year. Or they kind of go like, I know what that is. It's tense, it's mud, it's being miles away from, it's sleeping somewhere that's miles away from the show itself.
Yeah.
There's a lot of
sleeping at all is usually
not case. Sleeping at all because I mean if it's Download you're right next to the airport, so there's a Boeing 747 over your head every 2 hours. So it's like I've done that where it sounds like a plane's about to hit your tent because so loud. But I had a lot of fun with Download. For me, like the Download and Sonosphere blur over because my favorite festival memory is seeing the big four at Sonosphere, like Metallica, Megadeth, Anthrax and Slayer.
See, that's why I would go, because it's once in a lifetime style things like that where you get to see all of these bands finally together under one roof or no roof as it were.
I'll go with, for my Download memory, it'll be Rage Against the Machine. That was when they came back after the Finsbury Park gig, which I managed to see as well. So I saw them twice in 1 week because it was when their song went to number one for Christmas or whatever it was.
Oh, yeah.
And they did like a charity gig, and then I managed to get free tickets to that. And then I was at Download the following Saturday, like later in that week. And seeing them both in 1 week was ridiculous because Rage Against the Machine just used to be, or kind of still are, one of the best bands of all time. So I'd massively back that. But yeah, massive thank you to everybody for sending in their various questions, talking points, etc. This has been the Entitled Banter podcast, the UBP, the UBP.
UBP.
I've been Scott Tailford. That's been Jules Gill.
I have indeed. Remember, next Thursday, we will be doing the call for questions. Actually, no, we won't, because I'm just looking at my calendar. I am off next Friday. I apologize.
He's curdling in advance.
However, we will try and record on the Thursday then, so look out for either Thursday morning, Wednesday afternoon. We will put out the call for questions.
We have
gaming,
two...
film, TV, anything, food related, drinks related, whatever, we will answer the questions as best we can.
Hell yes, we shall. Yeah, there's 2 bank holidays in a row for the UK, so we've got to try and figure out these things in advance.
What a shame, eh? What a horrible life.
Long weekends with Star Wars. Horrific. Cool. But yes, for now, this has been the Entitled Banter podcast. Thank you all very, very much for listening, and we'll catch you next week. Goodbye.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.